Welcome back to another episode of Classroom to Calm, the podcast where every Friday we provide wellness insights to help teachers and school staff transition smoothly into the weekend and reset before the week ahead. I'm your host, Nathan Marshall, a senior at Eastern Oregon University and an intern at the Laboratory for Exercise Assessment and Performance, also known as The Leap. Our Classroom to Calm segments usually focus on a recent research paper that we can all apply to our wellness journey. But this week, we're switching things up. We're excited to welcome our very first guest, Dr. Kelly McNeil. Kelly is an associate professor here at Eastern, where she teaches a range of classes in the community health and human performance fields. She brings a wealth of experience in working with communities to improve public health, and is particularly passionate about using outdoor activities to boost wellness in both adults and adolescents. I've had the pleasure of taking several classes with Kelly, and I've always found them to be incredibly informative and engaging. We're thrilled to have her on the show today and share her expertise and experiences with all of you. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Kelly.
Why, thank you very much, and I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. This introduction was based off of your profile on the website. So is there anything else that you would like to add about yourself?
Sure. So one of the things that makes me a little bit more unique as a professor in public health is that I've actually worked in the field. I worked as a public health practitioner for 4 years before I went back to school and got my graduate degree in community health, public health. And that gave me a really great experience to be able to actually apply the things that I learned in grad school to the greater community as a whole.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So my first question for you is, what initially sparked your interest in health and wellness, and how did you get into the field of community health?
It was a teacher that sparked my interest. I went to the University of Montana to run cross country and track, and I just went there to do that. I had no idea what school was or college. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. When they asked me what I was going to major in, I said, what does the locker room look like? I don't know anything about college. My family didn't go to college. It wasn't part of like my world growing up. And I had this really amazing professor in my behavior change class. And she was just talking about how we can come up with all of the information that we need about how important exercise is for you, how important nutrition is for you, all of these different health concerns that we have. But unless we can get people to change their behaviors, unless we can get people to actually do these behaviors, then we're missing a step. And for some reason, that just resonated and clicked with me immediately. And I started going and I was like, oh, these classes are really cool. So I took behavior change, I took intro to community health, program planning. And I was like, this is exactly what I want to do. I want to try to help people, larger communities, change behaviors so that we as a society maybe could make it easier for us to make better choices and give us the skills to live a healthier life.
That is awesome. I think with this podcast, me and Kyle especially, like his background with the physiology stuff and what I've learned, that's on doing exercise science. So I don't really look at these things from a community health perspective, but I wanted to have Kelly on partly because of her expertise with behavior change and the science of getting into these healthier behaviors, because me and Kyle kind of talk about them as they're very easy to do. And we know that they're not. Implementing these different forms of exercise, we've talked about resistance training a lot, changing your diet, these kind of things. It's, you can say, I want to do that, but actually doing it is so hard. And it's even, Kyle talked about this pretty openly. I have too. It's even though we know what to do, to actually do it is like completely different.
Yeah, 100%. Everyone who's out there listening right now, if I asked you, do you have a behavior that you would like to change? I would say the majority of you, everyone would say, yeah, there are some things I can work on. Yeah. And then the question is, why haven't you? And there's a lot of different reasons why we don't change our behaviors, even though we want to and we have motivation to. There's so many other factors that are involved in that. There's over 250 behavior change theories out there trying to help us understand why people do and do not change behaviors.
Mm-hmm. When I took behavior change theory with Kelly, and I think that was like my first upper division class. And so one of the big projects was selecting a behavior at the beginning of the term and committing to that. And there was also a part of it where you were working with someone else in a lower division class to help them change a behavior. And it's one of those things where you realize how hard it is for people, even though when you look at that behavior, okay, that seems fairly easy. But for them, what they have going on in their life, it could be so much harder for them than it would be for you.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And it's just having empathy and being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And the more that we can do that, the more rewarding that experience is working with people, mm-hmm. and the more effective we can be as like health counselors.
Yeah, totally. I'm taking Brenna's personal health and wellness class right now. And so we're doing a similar thing with the behavior change. And we're presenting on Friday, actually. So when this episode comes out, my group, along with people who've taken behavior change, we're presenting the EQ article. And it was actually Daniel's idea. And then we're going to show that video of all the animals with the empathy and the sympathy. And Kelly's laughing because this is stuff that she showed me. And it's crazy because, again, I took this class 2 years ago and this EQ paper was super informative. And I'm reading it again, getting ready to present about it. And I'm like, this behavior change stuff and these self-efficacy and emotions and belief in yourself to commit to this stuff is like so important. It just goes over my head all the time. And so getting this kind of refresher is like super
nice. Nice. Yeah. And the EQ article that you're referring to is about emotional intelligence for those that don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Like looking at your ability to have self-awareness, interact with others and empathy versus just having intellectual intelligence.
Okay. So my next question is, we talk a lot about wellness on this podcast and we incorporate it into so many different things. We've talked about meditation, sleep. The list is infinite, which is why this podcast is so great, because we're never going to run out of things to talk about. But just hopefully this isn't putting you on the spot because you saw the question before. But if you want to talk about your definition of wellness and what it means to you, that could be super great.
Yeah. I think when we say health or we say wellness, the majority of people think physical. And they're just like, and all those things that you mentioned do help with your physical health and your mental health. But to me, it's very holistic. It means emotional, intellectual, environmental. It really is the definition of health and wellness. And that, I think, is really important because if we don't have a good environment, then we don't have access to go get healthy foods. If we don't have the environment, we might not even have clean water. So it's all very interconnected. And it's really hard to address one without addressing the others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I think from the community health perspective, you look at it, taking this class with Brenna is super helpful because I'm getting a refresher on the community health kind of outlook on things, because it's totally switched where I'm looking just at individuals and like their kind of adaptations to things and exercise and diet. And it's so individual. And I love that. And it's awesome. And I learn a lot from it. But the community health side, you can look at a group of people. And that's what we're doing right now, is talking to a group of people, right? We're not talking to any individual. We don't know any of our listeners' like personal situations. So what you say about like environment and how that influences like eating healthy, exercise, it's like, that's just such a good perspective to have.
I would like to add to that. I think that my area of expertise really is how to change behaviors on a community-wide level versus an individual level. Because to me, that's really where we can have the biggest investment, like in society, is changing the behaviors on a larger scale instead of one individual at a time.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So to follow up, we just talked about your definition of wellness, what that kind of means. I want to talk a little bit more about your wellness journey. You talked about running cross country in college. Obviously, I know you do a lot of stuff with the outdoors. I know you talked about your program Go ASAP and a lot of skiing and stuff like that. So what does your wellness journey look like? Do you have any non-negotiables during the day that you do? This could be things like diet, meditation, reading, hydrate, anything.
I have been trying to do yoga and meditation for like years and years, and I still have that behavior to change because I know it's good for me and I know I need to do it. But really my non-negotiable is I have to do physical activity every day. And I think that goes a lot into many years of running and doing that as an athlete for many years. I know that I'm a better person, that I can concentrate better, I'm calmer if I can get up in the morning and run or exercise or do some sort of a workout. That's my journey. I grew up eating Captain Crunch and big pepperoni pizzas and whatever, and all those things are fine in moderation if you need to, but I didn't have an idea of those things until I went to college, and then I thought, oh, these are connected to my performance. And then after college, I just knew I was a better person if I had it. I think if people can go from something that was maybe is extrinsically motivating, so they're like, oh, I have to meet my friend or I need to do this, till you can get intrinsically motivated, which means that you do it because you know you need to and you feel better and it's just part of who you are. And I think that, yeah, that's my non-negotiable.
Yeah, totally. I'm definitely like, I've talked about this a lot on the podcast about how, you know, I did play soccer and now I'm done. And so I'm in this weird phase where like, I don't know what to do.
Oh,
and
God. It's real.
I know. I haven't talked to you, but I haven't told you this, but like, I'm like kind of training for a marathon a little bit. Like I'm going to run the Seattle marathon and that's in the fall.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm like in this weird, like, I don't really know what to do with myself every day phase. We've talked a lot about too, Kyle and I, we went to a paper that talked about the actual like mental benefits of exercise. And it went really in depth about, okay, how does your brain change when you exercise? And so Kelly's like her non-negotiable, yeah, like I need to do it every day. And I'm the same way. And again, no one's saying that you have to exercise every day, but if it makes you feel good, by all means do it. Some people will feel better working out 4 days a week, 3 days, you know, but it's just, it goes to show you that like hammers in this point that we're trying to make of, okay, exercising will increase and make you feel better mentally.
Yeah. But for some people, that's just, it's maybe not an option or it's really hard to do. Mm-hmm. And so the important thing with that is just that you find what you need to do to make you something that just is part of your wellness journey, that is something that you need to do for yourself every day.
Yeah, totally. So I want to talk about behavior change, the class a little bit, because it meant a lot to me to learn that kind of stuff. It was the first class where I was like, okay, I'm not taking like such a broad class. I'd taken physics, chemistry, anatomy, and like they're year-long classes, but you're covering everything in, it's just impossible to learn everything. And same with behavior change theory. I'm not saying you can learn everything in 10 weeks because that's pretty much impossible, but it was a super specific class, which I thought was really cool. We focused on one aspect of science, like the whole term, which I was like, this is awesome. This is what you do in college. You take classes that are on like specific things. So I guess what I was going to go with this is, if you only had 5 minutes, not that you do, but like you do, what are some of the big points of behavior change theory that you'd want to pass on to a listener?
That there's a lot of them.
Yes.
And there's quite a few of them that work with different behaviors, mm-hmm. some that are really good for increasing physical activity. Others are more important for addiction. But the number one factor in behavior change is what? Do you remember?
Is it self-efficacy?
It's a good job. See, I love it when the student says something like that. It's self-efficacy, but it's not just the belief in your ability to change that particular behavior, but it's important to know how you actually can increase that belief. Mm-hmm. So that can happen through mastery experience, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And that's where we break down things into small steps. So if you do want to start a resistance training program, don't go in and lift the heaviest weight so that now you leave, you're so sore, you can't even get out of bed the next day. And then now you don't want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you start small and then you build, it's like shaping. And then that way you can build on past successes and then you can feel good and you can experience success. Because if you have failure right away when you're trying to change a new behavior, then you're less likely to do that again. Having verbal persuasion, someone there that's helping you, that's telling you good job, that's maybe like a personal trainer or a coach or a friend. That can also go into vicarious experience, is watching others do the same behavior. Say my mom's best friend lost weight. She's been trying to lose weight, but she's somebody that she can identify with and that she saw that she was successful, that can really motivate us and help us. And then just the feelings that we get, either positive or negative, emotional and physiological responses that we get from trying to change the behavior. And those are all things, they're all ways that we can change and increase or decrease our self-efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the more confidence we have, the more ability, the more likely we are to work on that behavior. The more failures we have, like me in yoga, then the less likely we are to be able to have the confidence that we'll ever be able to change it. And we just stop and we focus on something else.
Yeah, totally. And I like that you highlighted that like these things change based off of what behavior you're trying to change. Like you talked about yoga. And one behavior I'm trying to change is I'm trying to floss every day. I know it sounds like but it's hard for me to do. And it's something that I've been meaning to do for years. And like my dentist has always like been on it. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it now. And so I'm not going to watch a video of someone flossing. That won't be beneficial to me. But if I do it, like, okay, I'm trying to say, I'm going to start. The thing for me with this would probably just be like just doing it over and building momentum, maybe starting with every other day.
Mm-hmm.
And then going and then getting confidence from being able to do it every other day, then doing every day and those kind of things. Kelly highlighted the more complex these are, right? Obviously, starting an exercise program is a lot different than flossing. It's also a lot different from yoga. With these, there's a lot of these kind of strategies. And this is why ultimately really why I wanted to have you on is to highlight those and talk about those, because those are so useful. And even with like behaviors I'm trying to change now. And like for me, this whole big running program is the ultimate behavior I'm trying to change. Like, okay, how can I go from being a recreational runner to like training for a marathon, which does require like some behavior change. I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch videos on people doing it. I'm going to run with people who give me confidence to do it. I'm going to make sure I'm not overtraining, and so I build confidence so I don't not do it one day, those kind of things. So just depending on what your behavior you're trying to implement is, whether that's something that Kyle and I suggested.
I think that you hit the nail on the head. Yeah. With that one, it's making small changes. And even if it's like something like trying to stop drinking so much soda, and if you start out with just every time you like between the sodas that you would normally grab a glass of water. And then a lot of times we crave soda because we're thirsty, not necessarily because we actually want the soda. And adding those tiny little cues in there and breaking it down. And then now I have two glasses of water before I have my next soda. There's lots of different techniques and strategies that we can use. But we all know about the New Year's resolution time, right? And the gyms are full. And why do all of those things end up like going away for the majority of people? Because they have too many goals and too high expectations for themselves right away. And so they're trying to change the way they eat and their physical activity and do some yoga and stop drinking pop all in like the 1 week. And so that's what I mean by breaking it down in smaller steps is that why don't you take one of those and be like, I'm going to go to the gym. And then maybe the next month after you've been going to the gym 2 or 3 days a week, then you're like, okay, now I'm going to cut back on soda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And so the next question I had is I know you've done a lot of different like programs, you developed a lot of community health programs to help people get exercise and stuff like that. And I also wanted to talk about too, like the walking program that I know, I didn't really know is Jackie running that now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah. That was, Kelly started that, the Walk for Life program at EOU in the Newfield House, which was super awesome. That's still going on, by the way. So if you guys are looking for like a group to walk with, we've been huge proponents of walking. That is, I don't know what day it is, but I know it's from 6 to 8.
On Mondays and Wednesdays. It's a safe, warm environment with good music.
Yep. Awesome. Yeah. So I wanted to plug that too while Kelly's here. But to follow up on that, most of our listeners are school teachers or employees. And we've talked a lot about the stressful environment and how it can be so tiring. And then to go home and to then be motivated to exercise is like really hard. So what is your kind of advice to someone who is in a highly stressful job, who's very busy, who might be feeling a little bit burnt out, and then they're also trying to change behavior and start an exercise program? Do you have any like advice specific for that?
Yeah, I think just trying to find a time that actually will work for you, whether that is like me of getting up at 4:30 in the morning, because that's what I need to do to make it work, or it's a lunch break, or it's when you go home in the evening. And I do understand there are really long days, but even if you can get like 10 minutes in, like during your lunch break, maybe walk for 10 minutes and then go have your sandwich. And then you'll start to feel those effects of actually getting out, getting some fresh air and moving. I know oftentimes when I get home from work, I'm just ready to just sit down and decompress, but I can decompress by walking around the neighborhood with my dog instead. And that actually feels so much better, even though I'm like, I'm so tired, I don't want to go do this. But we have this thing called counter conditioning where we like replace one behavior with the other. So it's, I can have that Coke or that beer at the end of the day if I go for my 15-minute walk first. So even rewarding yourself for just like substituting those behaviors, a better behavior for a less desirable one.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, and so we've talked about too, like splitting up exercise and taking it when it comes and the walk. And again, Kelly just reinforced it. So that 10 minutes before you eat your sandwich is a great time to get a little bit of a walk in. Then you can 10 minutes after school, 10 minutes before school, whatever that may be. But just the point is that you can split it up. It's flexible. And then also, I really like what you talk about rewarding yourself. I think that's awesome. I do that a lot because I'll bring up side A. So I like, because I work at side A. Kelly comes in side A all the time.
Yeah.
So you see me all the time. But for those of you in Le Grand, it's a restaurant and bar here. But for me, it's like when I go on a long run or I do a workout that I'm really happy, I'll get a burger. And this isn't in like I deserve the burger because I worked out. This is okay. I'm really excited about this. I get to do something hard in the morning, go to work, and then get a burger after. I'm like, yes, this is going to be awesome.
Gives you something to look forward to.
Exactly. And again, I'm not saying this in, okay, I burned calories, so right. I deserve a burger. That's not how me and Kyle have talked. You don't earn food, right? Mm-hmm. That's very important to talk about when we're talking about exercise programs and changing nutrition and that kind of thing. But this whole reward system is like super, super helpful, I found, when changing behaviors.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you have anything else you want to add? Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
I just think even if you're listening to this, you're already like on the right step and the right journey. And I think the most important thing is that you find what works for you. Setting up an environment that is working for you, whether that's coworkers that you all decide that you're going to go walk for 10 minutes during lunch. You have a walking meeting. You meet after school. Maybe you have a 5K that run walk that you all decide to do so you can do it together. Social support, I think, gets overlooked quite a bit. And I think that it has so much value. Some accountability, meeting somebody at the gym. Those things are really important as well. But I commend anyone who's listening to this that you are already making the steps and are interested. And it's not easy, but it's totally doable.
Yes, it is totally doable. And yeah, this whole, I wish I'd brought up Walk for Life sooner, because like this is literally what we're talking about. And it is so useful to have this here. Super, super awesome program.
Yeah. And it's at the Field House and it's free.
Yes. Okay, cool. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insights, experience, and expertise with us. I found this super informative, and I'm sure our listeners will as well. To our audience, thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Classroom to Calm. We hope today's conversation with Kelly has given you some fresh perspectives and inspiration to prioritize your wellness as you head into the weekend. Don't forget to check out our past episodes for more wellness tips and help you reset and recharge. Until next time, stay well, and we'll see you next Friday. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.